Ask a VC by Ryan Floyd. Thoughts on venture capital and growing your SaaS startup.
Hey everyone, my name is Ryan Floyd. I'm a managing director at Storm Ventures. We're an early stage B2B focused venture fund. Welcome to a new episode of my podcast series, Ask a VC, where I give advice to you to help you grow your SaaS business, similar to what I'd be sharing with you if I was an investor or advisor on the board of your company. I originally recorded most of these episodes as videos, which you can see on my YouTube channel, Ask a VC. So as a result, please excuse any visual references in the podcast, though I don't think there are many. I hope you enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome back to Ask a VC. My name is Ryan Floyd. I'm a managing director at Storm Ventures. At Storm, we invest in B2B SaaS companies. And on this channel, I try to give you a little sense of what it would be like to have one of us on your board or an investor in your company. Today, I have with me my friend AJ, who's currently an EIR at Storm, an entrepreneur in residence. He most recently was chief product officer at Cornerstone, and before that, ran product at Adobe's Marketing Cloud by way of a company that coincidentally we were an investor in called Marketo. AJ, welcome.
Thank you for having me here, Ryan, on your beautiful board here in sunny California.
It's great to have you. And today, we're going to talk about AI. Not because everyone else is talking about it, but because as AJ and I were talking in the office last week, thinking about AI's impact really on B2B SaaS, we thought there's a number of things that we might be able to share and you all might be interested in. So let's get into it.
Yeah, Ryan, I think AI has been a transformative technology for a period of time. So it's not new.
No.
What's really changed is the evolution of how technology has taken place. We saw the era of the cloud and the cloud pioneers come in. We saw the era of the AWS and the infrastructure technology is becoming cheap and more available. And now you can run these large language models and large AI models on this commodity hardware, almost elastic hardware that you can take advantage of.
It is amazing. And you're right. I think sometimes people think that AI somehow it's like a new thing that it just is discovered. But in reality, it's really been around. I've been a venture investor now for 22 years, and we've been talking about AI since the very beginning. In fact, if people think back, I mean, to IBM Watson and Deep Blue, this was probably back in, I don't know, more than 20 years ago when Deep Blue finally beat everyone at chess. Yeah, and chess. Today, it's just accepted that AI can beat anyone at chess. And this was obviously an early experiment, but I think what's kind of got everybody thinking about it now is that all of a sudden with like ChatGPT, we can all, as individuals, we can sit down and, you know, see further power for ourselves and compare that to our kind of search experience and really kind of see.
Yeah, AI certainly has become much more accessible. Accessible to individuals, accessible to companies, accessible to various types of teams and things of that nature. And what's made that accessibility happen is it's going to unleash a different era of productivity, a wave of productivity where, look, you know, I think we'll no longer have to start from a zero to one. The blank slate is gone. AI is going to get you started in terms of all of the work that you need to do.
Huge difference. I mean, when I think about what's really made AI possible today, it's really clear you can really trace, I mean, not from just a pure tech standpoint, but like why now? I think a lot of people think about it. It's not because there's been some fundamental innovation, at least in my opinion. What has really happened is we're building on decades of lowering infrastructure costs that really kind of started, you know, kind of think about with the cloud, and all of a sudden compute costs came down, storage costs came down, and this allowed us to do so much more with data. I mean, for years we've been talking about all of our companies have been able to collect more data and do more with data, and that's because the costs have come down. I mean, you could do so much with data 20 years ago. The problem was it was astronomically expensive, and it just wasn't available to most companies, and certainly not startups and developers. But now, as those costs have come down, we've been able to store more data. We've been able to improve our ability to make compute accessible at a low cost. All of a sudden, this has provided now this foundation that now we're starting to see what we can actually do with AI, which still is expensive, most likely, for many applications. But we're going to continue to see that trend. I mean, the costs are just going to continue to come down, I would imagine, over time. And then we're going to see it just kind of continue to proliferate as people experiment more with, you know, where it can go.
You know, I think the recent development around ChatGPT and all of these AI models that are coming out, you know, there's a lot of hype going on, and you're going to see a lot of startups and a lot of innovation happening around this. But just like every other trend, whether it was mobile or cloud, there's going to lead to a separation between winners and losers in AI.
Yeah, I could agree more. Like, my observation over the years has been Silicon Valley tech investors in general do an amazing job of predicting trends. Like, we generally get, I think the tech community gets the trends right. But what we always get wrong is the time it will take to actually for those tech trends to really materialize. You know, I think back to like the internet. Like, you know, back in 2000, I mean, there was so much hype around the web. Now we look back on it, we're like, well, of course there was. The internet's a massive thing. But it took years before consumers felt comfortable to put their credit card information in, before the power on the laptop computers and browsers made it accessible, before web pages actually were interesting to look at. All these things took time to develop. And I think, you know, AI likely has a lot of those components to it. These trends tend to be so overhyped at the beginning, but then inevitably underhyped over the long term. Like, it's hard for me to sit here today and honestly say I could really understand the impact that AI is going to have, because it's going to impact so many things in ways that's hard to imagine today. But I can also tell you sitting here right now that probably many of the companies that are getting started right now will not ultimately be successful in really pushing anything forward in terms of tech, simply because it's just too new. And either the costs are going to be prohibitive, or it's not going to make sense, or, you know, something isn't going to be ready.
And I think these companies need to think differently. I think they need to think about the ROI that AI can bring to the use cases that they solve for, whether it's B2B use cases or consumer use cases. What I mean by that is, look, it's very easy to deploy AI to get a productivity lift in terms of getting new marketing copy out, in terms of transposing content in various different ways. But really, the ultimate ROI is, are you going to get a lift on revenue? Are you going to get a lift on conversions? Are you going to get a lift on, let's say, viewership in terms of some of your efforts? So how can we take all of these large language models, these proprietary AI models, and build it in such a way that ROI can be demonstrated through a proprietary service? It's not too different from how humans think, to be very honest. You know, think about this. All of us show up at our workplaces with all of the wisdom of the world and the experiences that we've gathered, our own individual experiences. Then we get into the workplace and we acquire what is called tribal knowledge. So we've got tribal knowledge around our domain. If I'm a sales rep, I've got tribal knowledge around the products I'm selling, the sales motions, things of that nature. And then I want to take all of that and I want to deploy some sort of filtering mechanism, some way of synthesizing this these various options that are there. So you get into a room, you brainstorm, you've got all of these options, then you synthesize it in such a way that it can provide ROI, you measure the ROI, and then you come back in.
Right.
So that feedback loop
right.
is where things change. And from a technology standpoint, what that means is you take the large language learning models, you deploy some tribal knowledge on top of that large language model, and then you deploy some proprietary AI, the classical AI, to start to demonstrate some sort of ROI. And there are lots of use cases that have already started to kind of emerge in this category.
Well, I like, you know, something we were talking about before, and I like the idea of, like, you know, trying to guarantee ROI. I mean, because ultimately, if you're going to sell software into an organization, right, B2B SaaS, you have to have some kind of ROI. Otherwise, you know, why is anybody going to buy it, right? So, but, you know, you'd mentioned, like, this idea of maybe even being able to, like, guarantee, like, AI maybe is going to get us to the point where, you know, vendors are going to say, you know, you don't have to believe me. We're going to guarantee this is going to happen for you.
I think that's the way the world seems to be going. If you look at the first generation of SaaS, it was all about seed-based licenses. So I've got seeds that I'm going to deploy to my salespeople, my customer reps, my outbound, inbound SDRs, my HR professionals, and you would monetize the seeds.
Right.
Then came this second era around value-based pricing and value-based business models. So it was usage-based business models. It's based on the number of emails that I send out. It's based on the number of transactions that I do. So that's the usage-based model. I think the new model is this, giving companies the insurance or the guarantee that they are going to get an ROI. I'll give you an example. In the financial services context, there's a lot of fraud that happens. Imagine if you can walk into a financial services customer and guarantee that you're going to approve some transactions that they thought were borderline fraudulent. And you're going to guarantee and promise that sort of conversion for them. And then you take you have a take rate on top of that type of transaction. Imagine in a B2C e-commerce setting, you walk into a B2C e-commerce retailer and guarantee a lift in revenues as a result of deploying this proprietary AI-based model. You do it in the SDR, BDR context in terms of really guaranteeing email opens and the ROI of those emails and in terms of getting appointments. You do it in the context of learning in terms of, kind of fostering course completions, not just the fact that you've got a new course in various different formats and things of that nature.
Yeah.
That's an example.
Yeah. You know, it's certainly as the B2B SaaS market has gotten so competitive and there's so many amazing solutions. I mean, there is a finite IT budget or, willingness to spend on tools. So there is, I think, increasing pressure to be able to deliver something where that ROI is even more clear. And ultimately, if you can guarantee something, you just make that buying decision so easy. On the other hand, I was thinking about it, and one of the things that AI has the potential to do, I think, importantly, is really drive up productivity. So you take the sales tool example, where maybe you're really improving the ability of your sales team to know which customers to speak with, or which emails to send when, based on a large amount of data that right now it's much harder to derive. And what that means is you have to have perhaps less salespeople, or the number of salespeople you have can cover a lot more customers, which ultimately then can drive up profitability and can allow you to do a lot of other things as a company. It might be hard to guarantee anything in that context, but the ROI is then around productivity. What got me thinking about is so often people talk about AI and they think it's going to replace jobs. Like, this is the fear, right? This is, it's going to replace these jobs. And my view on it is it's just going to make people more productive. Now, there's a chance, I suppose, you might need to hire less people to do the same job. But in general, it's not going to replace jobs. It's going to make just people more productive.
I think generative AI creates a range of options. Ultimately, it's the human that comes in and provides a yay and nay
right.
around those types of
right.
options.
Yeah, because there's no judgment. I mean, I think this is, with AI, I mean, we're not in a situation where there's judgment. There's still calls around accuracy, relevance of the result. All those nuances are not captured by at least AI today. It was interesting. I was thinking one of the opportunities is really around, for example, like data augmentation. I mean, one of the things, if you're in sales and you're talking to a customer, the more information you can have about that customer, whether it's public that's out there or private that you know in terms of the product usage that you have. But let's look at kind of the public domain. There's a tremendous amount of value to be able to talk intelligently to your customer about their problems, their issues, and the solutions that you can provide. AI potentially is great for that in terms of being able to automatically augment data and saving a salesperson a ton of time and being able to put all that together. But what's interesting is I was checking last night, ChatGPT, the data set is only through September of 21. So that also is pretty interesting. And it goes to show these language models, like you kind of have to be pretty thoughtful about what you're expecting to come out of that. Because if you're expecting any news or very current information or anything that's changing constantly, that's a good example where AI might not be very good at it because the data set isn't going to be as robust.
And data is the lifeblood of AI. AI doesn't work without data
right.
in and of itself.
That's right.
And there are situations where the data shape really matters. So if you've got certain cohorts where the data shape is a little light and sparse, AI can go to work on that.
Right.
So that's why you see, let's say, for instance, you've got AI deployed towards detecting misinformation on the web. Well, there's not a lot of information out there to train AI on the Crimean language, which is the state between Russia and Ukraine. So AI can't really do a thing about it. Now, there are different approaches. You can generate synthetic data, again, with generative AI. But there are some limits to what can happen at this point in time.
Yeah, synthetic data, that's a whole nother category and interesting area where, yeah, you're actually creating data to train, these models. But, yeah, your raise an interesting point is that I think people have to understand that to make the AI model successful, you have to have a tremendous amount of data. So putting that back into a B2B context, if you have customers that don't have, let's say, consistent ACVs, or maybe don't have consistent buying, it's going to be much harder to get accurate information out of an AI model just simply because you don't have a data set that's going to provide you the ability to predict and forecast. Now, the flip side of that is, I don't know if you met with our company Aviso, they're looking at very large data sets where customers have lots of smaller customers, but many of them, which makes it easier if you're using AI and machine learning to be able to then make predictions about where things are ultimately going to go because now you have a bigger data set.
Yeah, data sets are extremely important. It's also the variability of the data set. How much does the data vary? Do you have all of the data that is there, or are you only looking at a small sample of the data that's available to you? And I think the next mode that companies will build are the companies that have access to all of this data, and whether they have harnessed the data. So the encouragement for SaaS companies is to not so focus so much on the monetization aspect of AI, but the ability to garner all of this data very quickly. Imagine if you're a call center, contact center type of an application, and you need to deploy, let's say, an assisted agent type of an application.
Right.
Now, the companies are expecting you to get started from day one, but if you don't have access to the data, it can take you about 6 months to train and learn and things of that nature. With these large language models, the knowledge of how language kind of transposes itself, you have the ability to get started quicker on all of that. So you train it based on all the global data that you have and start to provide that ROI on day one.
Specifically in terms of where AI can really impact B2B SaaS, I think call center is, or customer-facing applications in general, whether it's chatbots, whether it's, it's on the phone, whether it's via email, I think it's a huge opportunity. Because you think about, using ChatGPT as an example, the language model that's built understanding intent and patterns and understanding questions people are asking, it's very powerful, and that language is sort of normalized across their model that now everyone can take advantage of, so long as you're willing to pay for access, that if you tried to build that yourself, it would be just hard, maybe impossible, but it certainly wouldn't be as accurate. It certainly wouldn't be as good. And I'm sure we've all had experiences with IVR and call centers where maybe there is an automated or a bot kind of response, and the human sensitivity to a poor answer or poor reaction, it's very sensitive and people can have a bad experience. So I think understanding that intent will be great, but at the same time, these general language models may not necessarily help some companies where an understanding of the specifics of a product that they have that's not really contained in a language model is going to be an issue, where then you're going to have to be able to construct applications that can basically fuse the two, where sometimes you're going to be pulling from a public API probably to understand intent, and sometimes you're going to be pulling from your own internal data set, proprietary data set, but it's going to at least constrain, the problem.
Absolutely. And it's not just on the CX side, even on the talent side. Imagine the process of recruiting and acquiring talent and matching people with opportunity. Imagine, taking over, looking at the resumes and trying to pass that and trying to superimpose jobs and recommend jobs to folks.
Right.
I think there's a huge application there. On the learning side, in terms of generating automatic course instructions. So you've got instructional designers that are doing this manually. Imagine aiding them in terms of creating various different formats of courses, creating assessments, so questions. Today you walk into a test, maybe there are three different types of question answers that get provided to students. Imagine now that you have these assessments that are generated on the fly by looking at that subject matter that generative AI consumes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's another great example, I think, in B2B SaaS. It's where you're going to see AI do some amazing things in its ability to summarize and extract value out of large amounts of data or text that you could do it or I could do it. It's not rocket science, but it would take a lot of time. So that kind of goes to the productivity piece. But having that embedded in a lot of these applications where, instead of looking at, we all love dashboards, right? And dashboards are great for metrics. So if you've got numbers and metrics, dashboards are great. But what if I just want to know, you had a really interesting meeting with a company yesterday, and I want to know the three key highlights from that meeting. Wouldn't it be great if, that can start now to get generated in a thoughtful way? And, there's a lot of cool companies that are well on the path for that, like companies like Gong and Chorus and, and others, right, and Avuma, that are doing some interesting things to try to figure out how to extract that confirmation. I think we're going to see a lot of cool things there to come as well.
Absolutely. I think that's where the industry is headed in terms of, bringing some of these proprietary data sets, proprietary tuning parameters, proprietary models, and trying to create pipelines. So the differentiation between companies is going to be what type of proprietary assets I can bring to the table. Can I bring a community? Can I bring a data set? Can I now create a proprietary pipeline of multiple models kind of stitched together? Am I going to be able to generate synthetic data sets? Things of that nature are going to differentiate one company from another in the next generation of AI for X yeah. applications.
If because you, you know, you said it right. I mean, I think if you're just leveraging a general purpose AI model, whether it's from Google or whether it's from ChatGPT or, you know, Alibaba or whoever comes up with their next, like, that's going to be hard to build anything really differentiated, right? It would be like the equivalent kind of would be like putting a Google search bar inside of your SaaS application. Like, it doesn't necessarily really do a lot. So you got to figure out how to really stitch something together that enables you to deliver more value. And I think just, you know, just building like a SaaS application on top of AI, that probably isn't going to hunt for most like B2B applications. It just, you know, because there's not going to be enough value long term you're going to be able to build.
I think there's short term value in terms of the novelty effect. And, you know, everybody, the bar is going to be raised in terms of what knowledge workers will start to expect. This is a new calculator that we'll all get.
Right.
In terms of, we don't have to start from a blank slate. We'll have AI generate copy for us, AI generate assessments for us, AI get us started. But after that, what is the next order of value that you're going to deliver in terms of the ROI that we were talking about?
That's right, exactly. All right, well, listen, AJ, thank you. I want to thank all of you too for watching. You know, when I describe AI to others that maybe aren't as, you know, geeky as we are, as like interested in it, I think about like really simplistically in the way that, you know, I think chess, as I mentioned earlier, is just a really good example of where AI works and how I encourage everyone to kind of think about with their B2B SaaS applications. And what I mean by that is AI works really great where the constraints are well understood. And in chess, the reason AI just dominates and has dominated for a long time is that the constraints are understood. You know, chess is not a game of chance. It's predictable every move, right? You know what moves you can make. There's no roll of the dice. And importantly, all the rules are understood by all players. Maybe some players better than others, but they're all understood. And that's where like AI does a phenomenal job. And in B2B SaaS, I have no question that every SaaS company, most likely in the, you know, in the next decade, AI will be a part of their fabric. And for a company to say they're an AI company will seem as ridiculous in 10 years as for a company today to say they're a cloud company or they're a mobile company or they're an internet company. I mean, it's just, it's going to be part of the fabric of B2B SaaS.
I think the promise of AI is here, right? I mean, you're already seeing some fantastic applications of AI in B2B software, in consumer use cases, and you're going to go and see more adoption of these technologies and types of efforts in various different industries. So I'd say don't fear it. Jump into it. I think figure out how we can do something more productive with it and try to demonstrate that ROI, and you'll be golden from the next era of SaaS.
Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. If you're listening to it, please hit the like, subscribe button, share with your friends. And until next time, thanks for watching Ask a VC.
Thanks,
AJ.
Thank you.
's for listening. If you found it interesting, please subscribe. If you like it, make sure to share it with your friends. If you've got a suggestion for a topic for this podcast or even a video series, then tweet me. My handle's easy. It's Ryan Floyd, all one word. Or send me an email or even leave a comment on my YouTube channel. All right, until next time, thanks. Be safe.
Thank you for listening. Visit youtube.com/askavc for a video version of this podcast.